From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment, the home edition. Well, it's in many homes, and my guests today graciously decided to return after a terrific show last year. The creative forces behind The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Amy Sherman-Palladino and Dan Palladino. And let me start with this, guys, because something I always wanted to ask you, and it really fits into this season of the show. There is such a difference between the way you guys depict night versus the way you depict daytime. And that really kind of came to rest in the episode with Lenny Bruce that's kind of a morning after without consummation. But talk about the differences between night, which is a really romantic period, and what anything seems to happen, and daytime seems to be very much about reality.
Well, but isn't that the way? Doesn't everything get more romantic at night? You know, the life of a comic is a nightlife. Your cycle is reversed. You know, you go to work when the sun goes down, and then you stay up all night, and then you go to bed when the sun comes up. So there is something sort of like, especially in a city like New York, it has a like an otherworldly feel to it. Like night is its own reality, and then daytime comes, and you see what you look like after the night before, where you thought you looked so attractive in the good lighting, and then you have to face all the realities of life, when work and family and kids, and it has a different rhythm to it. Things are a little bit more elegant at night, maybe a little bit more legato, and daytime just has a little bit more of a business clip to it.
Staccato.
Legato.
No, the daytime staccato.
Legato to the nighttime legato.
I had musical training.
All right.
The daytime is staccato.
All right.
It's Italian. I'm the Italian.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm going to tell you.
The daytime oh, my
is
God.
Italian. It's staccato.
Anyhow, this is what day is.
Yes, it definitely feels staccato to me right now. But it even goes back to Gilmore Girls. I mean, nighttime becomes wistful and anything feels possible. And daytime seems very much about realism and trying to meet obligations. And weirdly, for somebody like Midge, who never seems to sleep, she seems to be kind of lost during the daytime in this season.
I have to say, I'm a partial person to nighttime. I enjoy when it gets dark early. Daytime to me it's a little too much. And I do think that lovely things happen at night. I think that it's everything is prettier at night, and everything feels a little more sparkly, and it does just feel a little bit more magic. And, you know, when you're dealing with something like Stars Hollow, you know, the nighttime would come and the twinkle lights came on, and suddenly the whole town kind of like became dusted with pixie dust a little bit. I mean, on Gilmore, especially, because we never left the lot on Burbank. We just sort of walked in a circle for 6 years. That you know, you needed that sort of two worlds feeling so that everything didn't sort of just kind of mush in together.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, like, Elvis, what you're picking up on is like the depiction. If you did a study of the depiction of night in movies and TV going back decades, it started out like night in a Fred Astaire movie was the glamorous, fun time of day. But a lot of times night in movies and television is the dangerous time
of day.
It's
scary.
And I think a lot of projects sort of lean into that. And for us, like night is kind of more the more fun part of day. And I think it is for a lot of people. I think it's just the way the business sees nighttime and the way stories are written, that under the cover of dark, everything turns a little risky, a little shaky, a little more dangerous.
See, for me, daytime does that, because daytime's when you got to face the reality of everything. So daytime to me
is like a mirror.
Yeah. Daytime is horrible. It's just a storm, the daytime. You don't look as good. You can read your mail, which is never good. You can, like, people can get you on the phone because you're supposed to be awake and answering.
I get texts from Nancy Pelosi.
Constantly.
Those all come in the day.
So many texts from Nancy Pelosi. And it's just, I don't know. Nighttime just feels like you can sort of steal away and nobody knows where you are, or what you're doing. I don't know. I like that.
So much of this show and so much of the things you guys do is about romance. When you can't quite see everything, because New York even looks very different during the daytime. You know, it looks like you maybe want to turn away from it a little bit.
Yeah.
And just that kind of gloss. I mean, the nighttime really lends itself to an old school, and we talked about this last time, with romantic screwball comedy and people dressing up, as you were saying, Dan, like Fred Astaire dressing up to go out for a night on the town and those old movies. This idea that romance really, we really see it in the last scene of the last episode, how that romance and nighttime and when anything is possible.
Yeah, nighttime was also a time where things can get quiet and your brain can get quiet and thoughts that couldn't enter during the day because there's too many other things that you're thinking about sort of float in there. You know, it's that thing where you go to bed and suddenly you have thoughts that, you know, didn't occur to you during the day. I go to bed and that's when I can fix my script because I'm supposed to be sleeping. And it's just, I don't know. It's that sort of like, I've always loved nighttime and I've always been not that fond of day. I don't know why. I grew up in Southern California. It was always sunny. The sun and I do not get along. That could have something to do with it. And, you know, in New York, daytime is, you know, you can see the smells, you know where they're coming from.
Yeah, like
at night, you don't know where they're coming from. So it's a...
For Amy, the Annie song, The Sun Will Come Out, was like a tragic
It's such
song.
A sad song.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
She weeps during.
It's just terrible. Why? Stay away.
It's the treatment. We're talking to my friends, the reverse vampires, Amy Sherman Palladino and Dan Palladino. The fourth season of Marvelous Mrs. Maisel just concluded on Amazon. And it's interesting, too, because certainly subtextually, COVID is part of this year. But also, it feels like this thing to me, and I want to ask you about this. It's like because Midge has kind of walked away from her mission a little bit. She's determined that she's only going to do a certain kind of thing. It's kind of like she's lost her magic powers a little bit. Her ability to sort of make things work has gone away, has deserted her in this season, hasn't it?
Well, I think that awareness has come to her. You know, Midge was somebody that was sort of swept along by life. I mean, her whole life changed not of her doing. You know, it was her husband that walked out and sort of dropped a bomb and sort of like she found herself on this other path and started, you know, discovering an ambition that she didn't know was there. And I think she was just sort of like looking at life, like in a good way, like an adventure, like what's next and sort of like going from moment to moment. And I think that this is the year that, you know, she finally realized I can't not be master of my own destiny. And whether or not her path is the right path for her or the wrong path for her, I think it is the first time that she decided to take control of something as opposed to letting life happen to her.
I guess I'm wondering too, because we were talking just before we got started about this being the penultimate season of the show. And when you guys were last here, there's conjecture about her doing Mike Douglas, sort of jokingly, but I was looking forward to seeing what she would be like in the 70s when the world has kind of caught up with her. Because in her way, and this happens often for you guys, you have a character who's kind of out of time. In Gilmore Girls, it was the difference between kind of Lorelai and Rory. And here, Midge is, in her way, she feels like she's the future. And I was looking forward to seeing her catch up with her.
Well, stay tuned.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would say. We're not done yet, dude. I mean, we're not gone. We're still we're at work right now. So shit's still happening.
We have one more year, and we have a whole bag of surprises and images and things to show people. I mean, if we were to go in kind of real time of her career, we would never get to the Mike Douglas show, which, by the way, I grew up watching, came home every day, and instead of learning or reading or doing homework, watch Mike Douglas.
That is why you and I do what we do.
I couldn't get enough of Tody Fields.
Because we have no transferable skills at all. We have no way to make it in the real world.
We're deep into season 5 now. We have a big, exciting year, and there's going to be a lot of different images and things to look forward to. Because it would be interesting to see Midge on the Mike Douglas show. I love that stuff, I say who knows. I'm supposed to know. I'm actually being paid to know. So really, I should fire me.
I will fill you in later.
Okay, thank you.
I want to ask you about the way you guys chart the characters' evolutions, because this feels like the season where she has to grow up. And that happens, yeah, as happened in Gilmore Girls. You're working towards that in Bunheads, the point where the characters say, oh, I can't pretend I'm not an adult anymore. Now what happens? I mean, that terrific episode of Bunheads we talked about last year where she had to go out and audition for the cattle call, and suddenly she was confronted with the idea of what it's like for adults. And this whole season has been about that.
Yeah, I'm hoping to grow up one day. So I just do it through characters. So I don't ever have to face the reality of being an adult, because I just don't think I'd be very good at it, actually. I think I would completely fail. Yeah, you know, I mean, look, people grow and they change and they learn things. And I don't think anyone ever comes to the final end of their evolution. I mean, they do, because, you know, you die. That is the end of your evolution. But it's like, I think that it's a constant, you know, life is a constant learning, growing, changing experience. And I think after a while, it wouldn't be as fun if somebody didn't say, let me take a little stock here and let me see if making a left turn is going to help me out. Midge is navigating the world of show business, a world she is not born into, a world she is not really, she did not train for, she was not ready for. So it's a new world. And especially the idea of like, now I've got to figure out how to achieve a goal myself, because nobody seems to be able to chart that course for me. I think it's up to me. I think that that's just sort of naturally where you want this character to go. Now, whether or not they succeed, they fail, they get derailed, sidetracked, there's a sale at Bergdorf's and you have to stop growing for, you know, 20, 30 minutes while you buy a dress, you know, that's all part of the journey. But it did feel like after the Apollo and after being on tour and after her experience with Shai Baldwin, it felt like I need to have my eyes a little bit more wide open going forward.
I guess I'll ask too, because it's not just that Midge is brought up short by reality. It's everybody. It's her father-in-law. It's her ex-husband. It's her parents. It's Susie. It's even Sophie. Everybody's running into what it's like when suddenly you have to deal with the idea that the world that you're trying to will into being isn't happening, which is something the province of childhood almost.
Isn't that what it is? We're going around living our lives. And then suddenly there was a little thing called, you know, Dan and I were standing at Heathrow watching them cancel all the flights to China. And we're like, huh, what's that all about? And then you go home and suddenly everything that you knew your whole life was thrown up in the air. And you had to sort of take a moment to figure out what your next move is and who you are going forward. I think that life throws those things at you, and it's how you respond to it that is the drama or the non-drama. It felt like the moment for her to have that, you know, her life was in complete disarray. What do? Do you go back to bed? That's what I do. I just go back to bed and I hope that it will fix itself. But she chose to not go back to bed. She chose to sort of try and take control, and whatever comes with that, she's going to have to handle.
No, but no, I was just fascinated because everybody's running into walls this season. Even Susie's kind of helpers, her sort of gangster godfathers, fairy godfathers, if you will, who went, whoa, even we can't help you with this one. I just thought that was really interesting that reality is intruding everywhere on the show in this season.
Amy's dad's a comic. Her mother is a dancer, singer, has been in Broadway shows and in Iraq. And they've talked, I think we've mentioned this before, but they've talked a lot about the mob being around. So, you know, and the good old days of the mob. It was a really, really different time. Yeah, we just thought it would be funny to see those guys come up against an opponent that even they're concerned about. Yeah, it all kind of goes back to the pilot that, like, you know, we always talked about the big bang of like Midge getting dumped and going up on that stage and changing her life, changed the lives of everyone around her. And we're going to follow through on that in season 5, because sometimes it takes these exogenous events that sometimes they cause harm, but sometimes they blow up a world, blow up a life, and you get some sort of realization from it. And you go off on a path that is maybe better than the one you were on before. So we always kind of keep that in mind. We did that a lot in Gilmore Girls about just, you know, plot is just events knocking characters around. And we always keep in mind the ramifications and how it affects everyone around a character. We've had a lot of fun tracing everybody, every character on this show due to that big, giant blow up in the pilot.
We'll take a break. We're talking about the Big Bang Theory of life, intruding on the marvelous Mrs. Maisel with my guests, Amy Sherman-Palladino and Dan Palladino. We'll take a break. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back. My guests, who just used the word exogenous on public radio, are Amy Sherman-Palladino and Dan Palladino, talking about the fourth season of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon. And for me, this season is so much about the way you guys navigate so beautifully playing melodrama with comedy. The moment where Lenny is opening himself up and sort of seeing, again, the future in Midge, because she really is the future. And even he sees that he's not the future. And he sees that she is. And that great moment that starts off as almost like a Broadway farce when they walk into Shia's wedding, and then it becomes something else entirely. I mean, this season is really giving you guys a chance to play to all these strengths you have compacted into single scenes.
We've always felt that the best comedy has a great deal of drama in it, and the best dramas have a great deal of comedy in it. We think that drama does not work without laughs. I can't tell you how many movies or TV shows I've watched where I'm like, a laugh, one laugh. Because even in your life, at the worst moment, somebody's going to laugh somewhere. Something weird is going to happen. It's just, it's life does not, you don't go through life completely devoid of laughter. And it feels like they are not mutually exclusive. And so we've always really wanted to make sure that there was plenty of both in the work that we do, because the drama is going to fuel the comedy and the comedy is going to relieve the tension of the drama. And it's going to make both of them land more. The great thing about this cast that we have is that they can do both, that they can be unbelievably funny and yet break your heart in the next moment and flip from one to the other and are completely real in both. And when you have those sort of actors at your disposal, to not use that as to the full extent of the law would be kind of sad and criminal.
So I was thinking about, too, that morning after for Shia, after he's been beaten and she's on the boat with him, that moment where she's talking to him and she sees how adrift he is and she just wants to reach out to him. I mean, that's, talk about the evolution of that scene, if you would.
Well, you know, when Shia and Midge formed their friendship, part of the reason I think that Shia even let Midge in to his inner circle is because she's a woman that never has an agenda. You know, she didn't look at Shia like there was anything for her in it, you know, other than to just be friends, to hang out, make him laugh, help him out. I think that there was a brief shining moment where a guy like Shia, who I think is very cynical and very guarded and clearly had to be, saw somebody who didn't really want anything from him, didn't really need anything from him except friendship. And I think that's very rare in his life. And sometimes you can let that in for a brief shining moment, but then the world and circumstances take over and you shut her back out again. And I think all she ever wanted to do after what happened to the Apollo was face-to-face apologize to him and her frustration of not being let in again when she thought, but we had this friendship, we had this opening, we didn't need anything from each other. You know, I don't understand why I can't at least beg your forgiveness or at least let you know how I feel and that I'm so aware of it. And we were saving that moment for some time afterwards because we knew we wanted it to happen. And it just sort of evolved that this year where it just seemed perfect at a wedding where he's sort of saying goodbye to any sort of freedom or openness in relationships by getting married and by cutting off his friends and supporters. Sort of the last person who didn't need anything from him confronts him just to say, I'm sorry and I wish you well. You know, I think it's very sad for her to see what Shy is heading off into.
And we also wanted to show that in the scene in season four, we also wanted to show Midge understanding that she made a mistake. You know, comics, as we've seen recently at what's it called, the Oscars, we were depicting a similar thing in the Apollo sequence in season three, that a comic can go out and make mistakes. Midge made a mistake at the Apollo. She just leaned into information that she knew that she shouldn't have leaned into. And this is a common thing for comics, that they just cross that line and they don't know, because they're always crossing it and going back and then crossing it and going back.
Also, I think that people don't understand how truly terrifying stand-up comedy is. Standing up on a stage, and if you fail, it's all about you. You failed. You can't blame anybody else. You can't say, oh, the script wasn't good, or my actor dropped his lines, or look at this costume I'm in. It's you. If they reject you, they reject you. It's a very personal thing. And comics have to be gunslingers. And a lot of times you're going to go out there and you're going to try and land that laugh no matter what. And if you are a natural comic and stuff comes out of your mouth, half the time something's going to come out of your mouth that maybe had you had a moment to think about it, you know, shouldn't have come out of your mouth. But that's just not the way comedy works a lot of the time. And that's what she experienced. She was panicked. She was confronted with Moms Mabley and an audience that was completely different from her audience. And the need to do well and the need to get that laugh, which is the reason the comics become comics, it was the most overwhelming thing in that moment, you know, and that's what she would have said. And she would have said, I was blinded by fear and I made this horrible mistake and I will spend the rest of my life making it up to you if I could.
It's the treatment. We're talking about consequences with my guests, the creative forces behind The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Amy Sherman-Palladino and Dan Palladino. I'm glad you brought this up, because I was going to ask you about that, because that season two, that was kind of a consequence of something. That was Midge watching Lenny, the way he worked, seeing him in that Miami After Dark show and how he just sort of like opened himself to anything. And just in some ways, it felt like she was trying to sort of absorb who he was and what he did in that moment too, and just getting high on the crowd. And this season really feels like a kind of a whole morning after season, but also it's a season about consequences and facing up to the repercussions of your actions.
Yeah, it's also about, and we were also playing at the same time, the hurt that Midge felt by being dumped like that, and the anger. And the petulance. There were a lot, you know, there's a lot going on there, but this was Midge Maisel learning showbiz friends are not necessarily real friends. And that's just the way it is. That's why you hear all these stars talking about my friend, my friend, my friend. You think, and wait, you can't be friends with all these people. You know why? They're not friends with all these people. The word friend is used very loosely in a lot of businesses, but in show business especially. This is a hardening of the heart for someone like Midge Maisel, who was a much more giving and receiving person before this, even though what Shy did was understandable. Even though what Shy did was, he took great offense at something she said that was truly offensive, but she's a comic and she crossed the line and she didn't realize it until later. So we tried to play into all those kinds of nuances and try to play the humanness of it, what show business ramifications are. Shy was a very complex character. He had to be deep. He felt he had to be deep in the closet. And back then, when you were in the closet, you really had to be deep in the closet. If that was a choice you made, it was a much more unforgiving world for especially a Black man to be openly gay. So we were playing into a lot of things in there. Hopefully it worked, but it was just sort of a hard lesson for Midge, where she realized, I overstepped, I caused this. I'm also going to harden my heart, because true friendships do not come easy in show business.
Yeah, and a true friendship, you're going to let that person apologize. I mean, if you're really, really friends, if you really have, because friends can hurt each other. You know, lovers can hurt each other. You know, husband, wives can hurt each other. Dan.
Ow.
Dan.
Ow.
And yet in a real relationship, somebody can say, I am so sorry. Boy, did I screw that up. Boy, is that, that was a dumb move. And then you can keep the relationship. But they never had the relationship. So I think she also felt kind of stupid and kind of naive that she walked into this thing thinking they were one thing and clearly they were another. And she should have known that. They were employee and employer. That's what they were. And that also would color what you say about the person. She was treating him like a pal, like the way you might joke around about a friend of yours, as opposed to, no, this is your employer. He's going to come out here afterwards. You are working for him. Your job is to make him look good. That is why you are here. And I think all of that was balled up into Midge, and all of that went into her spinning herself into the direction she did this season.
It's funny too, because I feel like, again, consequences, her sort of having this valley in her career is because she's decided she's only going to be a headliner. She's not going to open for anybody. There are choices that she's made, and her father's walked away. The consequences of him walking away from his career in academia, and the consequences of her mother walking away from the family fortune. And for Joel, the consequences of leaving the family business behind. This entire season, I just wondered if this was something you guys felt that you wanted to build on, because it really feels foundational to every episode. That each of this season really feels about consequence and repercussion.
I don't know that we ever sat there and thought that much, because we're much more shallow than you're giving us credit for. But
usually drunk.
Yeah, 99% of the time completely drunk. But how delightful that you picked up all that. We try to take our characters on a journey every season we go into it. And the whole concept from the very beginning was her decision to go into comedy changed everything about everybody. And what is that? And so I think that that was just sort of an organic path that we took.
Each season sort of has a kind of a thematic, sort of really a joint holding it together. And that each of these episodes is about having to deal with a consequence of an action, because that last season was really kind of like the first blush of romance. And then the second season was about her sort of figuring out, oh, this is what it's like to do something that's entirely different. And to have some control over your life when in fact she hadn't before and was okay with that. Because it feels really intentional to me, or at least intentional in terms of the way the show is moving.
The one thing we do try and do is figure out, like, what are we playing with Midge? Because that sort of determines what we do with everybody else. So it was sort of exactly what you said. Like the first year, it was sort of like realizing, oh, wait a minute, I have ambition. Oh, wait a minute, there's something else out there. And the second season was sort of dipping her toe in that water and toying with that and seeing how that was going to fit into her life. And was she going to commit to it, and what that was going to do to everything else. Third season was, okay, I'm in it. Let's go on tour. Let's see where that journey takes me. And then the fourth season is it's the let's grow up season. It's the, I got to be an adult now season, and I got to either make this happen or I'm not sure why I took this path. And then fifth season will be the death of Amy and Dan. We'll just be exhausted and crying. That's the theme of the fifth season.
I can always talk to you guys for so long, but we're right out of time. And I want to thank you again. Thank you for doing this. My guests, who are clearly only my showbiz friends, are Amy Sherman-Palladino and Dan Palladino. They are the creators of the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and fourth season on Amazon. Production staff includes Katie Gilchrist. The show is edited and produced by the marvelous Rebecca Mooney. To better days, everyone. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.